Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and how about them Tigers? They just completed a series sweep of the Houston Astros in the wild card round, and they are now, and I can't believe I'm saying this, on their way to face the Cleveland Indians in the American League Championship Series. I can't tell you how pumped I am for the Tigers to be continuing to play some more October baseball. I mean, back in early August, nobody thought this was even possible. It was just a dream. It wasn't even just a dream. Nobody thought that there was a chance the Tigers would ever be in this position. Okay, I'll finish the show with a little Tigers talk, but we've got some more important things here to cover this week. For instance, as we heard in the vice presidential debate between MAGA Ohio Republican dude bro J.V. Vance and Minnesota Democratic Governor Tim Walz, the elimination of abortion rights continues to hound MAGA in every single debate or interview they give, and it keeps costing them at the polls as well. They know it. Everybody knows it. And like in the presidential debate, where Vice President Kamala Harris jumped from the top rope and landed a devastating elbow on Dear Leader Trump's head as he insisted that everyone wanted him to take away basic healthcare freedoms from women across the country, Vance also squirmed as Walz hammered both Vance and his boss's desires to set some kinds of abortion bans into effect. And it just goes to show how much America, especially women, resent Trump and the Republicans for attacking their basic rights, their basic freedoms, and putting them all in danger in the name of Christian nationalism, and also because of Trump and Vance's loathing of women having any kinds of agencies over their healthcare decisions. And because of those decisions, women are paying with their health and with their lives as MAGA right-wing state Republicans across the nation are enacting some of the most hate-filled anti-abortion care laws. Coming up to talk more about why abortion care is once again a major election issue will be Amanda Mazur, who is the vice president of Northwest Michigan Reproductive Freedom, and I cannot wait to talk with Amanda here in a few moments. Now, first, there are a couple of things I want to talk about here this week. First, after the Veep debate, J.V. Vance visited Auburn Hills here in Michigan, and Detroit News reporter Craig Mauger tweeted the following experience that he had before Vance's cult rally, and I'm quoting here, okay? Here in Auburn Hills, where J.D. Vance will be speaking this afternoon, at the press check-in table, a volunteer says they need me to risk my life to make sure the truth about Donald Trump gets told. I asked the volunteer what they were talking about, and another volunteer said that she knows powerful forces are telling me what to write. I said that wasn't true. Oh, whoa. All right. And there it is, everybody. I mean, that's MAGA Republicanism in a nutshell. And I have to say, I do fear for reporters and their safety because these cult followers have been so brainwashed that they will cause, or at least threaten to cause, violence. Violence is part of the MAGA trademark. Just last week, during a Trump rally at Macomb Community College, one of our good friends from the progressive activist group known as Distill Social here in Michigan, headed by Gina Keller, who's been on the podcast here a couple of times, reportedly got sexually harassed when a man grabbed them and forcibly tried to kiss them. Now, Distill Social says this was in stark contrast to other Trump MAGA rallies that they've attended where people talk with them and they often feel safe. But they said not this time. And as Distill Social posted on Twitter, we will continue to cover these events because it's our job. But what happened in Macomb County was not acceptable. When you cultivate a culture that marginalizes women and when your rhetoric shows a clear disrespect, we can't be too surprised that supporters would act this way. Look, I'm sorry. The good people from Distill Social had to deal with such an experience, and this just reminds me to please check out their Point of Disorder podcast. Gina, Julie, and Adrian do a fantastic job week in and week out delivering the news and commentary on politics and pop culture that's happening here in Michigan and beyond. So please check out the Point of Disorder podcast. They do a great job. It's worth your time to listen. But getting back to MAGA and violence. You see, violence or the threat of violence or intimidation is what drives MAGA the most. And Dear Leader knows this, which is why he resorts to violent rhetoric on a daily basis. Now, I'm not saying this is the worst thing in the world, but in my sector here in mid-Michigan, I've had campaign signs damaged while other friends here in this area have had their signs downright stolen. A friend of ours down the street had their Harris Wall sign stolen the other day. No problem, though, as our friend simply just picked up more Harris Wall signs and posted signs from other Democratic candidates as well. So, hey, good job there. But still, it's that kind of intimidation and fear that's pervasive within the MAGA cult. And that's all thanks to Dear Leader's constant complaining and also him playing the victim. Yet this kind of violent rhetoric isn't just something that we all can laugh off. I mean, I know that we all had a little fun when Dear Leader Trump sounded like Grandpa Simpson yelling about Haitian immigrants eating cats and dogs in Springfield, Ohio. I just chuckled when I was saying that just now. And while we, including Vice President Kamala Harris, made Trump look even more foolish by mocking him with laughter, his words and the words of J.B. Vance are having serious consequences for those Haitian immigrants who are here legally. And it's also having serious consequences for others, including those who are hiring Haitian immigrants to work at their stores. For instance, a businessman in Springfield is facing threats because of his defense of his Haitian workers. Let me just say that again. A businessman is facing threats because he defended his Haitian workers. Salon reports that Jamie McGregor, a fifth-generation Springfield resident and owner of McGregor Metal, first hired Haitian workers after a large population of Haitian immigrants settled in the Ohio town back in 2020. They now make up 10% of McGregor's team and over 300 employees. Chaos and violence descended on Springfield after a false rumor that Haitian immigrants in the town were eating local pets was spread nationally by Republican nominee Donald Trump and his running mate, Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio. Amid that campaign, McGregor felt the need to speak up and defend the Haitian employees who are crucial to his business's success. They come to work every day. They don't cause drama. They're here on time, he told the New York Times earlier this month. He also defended his employees on PBS NewsHour, noting that his Haitian employees are also the most reliable. Since then, McGregor has faced a number of death threats, including posters around town with his face printed alongside the word traitor, forcing him to increase security at his business. Why are you importing third world savages who eat animals and giving them jobs over United States citizens? A voicemail left for McGregor said. McGregor, who is a lifelong Republican and two-time Trump voter, has since purchased a gun, something he had previously vowed never to do. Huh. And all this started because of Trump and Vance, as they decided to play on their cult following's ignorance and fears and racism, rather than celebrate how Haitians are trying to live out the American dream and how Haitian immigrants are actually helping their town. They are in America legally, thanks to a new federal program that allows them to travel directly from Haiti if they have a sponsor who's willing to support them during temporary humanitarian parole, as reported in Michigan Advance. Now, there was absolutely no need for this, no need for this. But Trump and Vance needed to demonize immigrants because that's what the playbook calls for. And they thought Haitians eating cats and dogs was the ticket to reaching some of those voters. Of course, Vance gave up the game when he told CNN's Dana Bash a few weeks ago that he has to create or make up stories to scare voters about immigrants.
I have to, the American media totally ignored this stuff until Donald Trump and I start talking about cat memes. If I have to, create stories so that the American media actually pays attention to the suffering of the American people, then that's what I'm going to do, Dana, because you guys are completely letting Kamala Harris Coast. You had one interview with her. You talk about pushing back against me, Dana. You didn't push back against the fact that she cast the deciding vote on the Inflation Reduction Act, which is why a lot of Americans can't afford food and housing.
You just said that you're creating a story.
We ought to be talking about public policy.
Sir, you just said that you're creating the story.
What's that, Dana?
You just said that this is a story that you've created. So the eating dogs and cats thing is not
We are accurate. Creating, we are, Dana, it comes from firsthand accounts from my constituents. I say that we're creating a story, meaning we're creating the American media focusing on it.
You know, my favorite part of that whole thing is when Vance says that he was simply reporting what constituents told him. So if his constituents told him that the Loch Ness Monster was seen swimming in the Cuyahoga River, then I guess he'd just simply retell the story that the Loch Ness Monster is indeed swimming around freely in Cleveland? I mean, that's how the lie started. And of course, not one Haitian immigrant is eating people's pets, but that didn't stop the news media from sending people there to confirm that the lie is indeed a lie. Oh my God. Or it didn't stop the right-wing MAGA blowhards out there like former presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy from showing up because he just really had to be there to see it for himself. You see, all of this then just solidifies for certain people out there that something bad is happening with Haitian immigrants in Springfield, Ohio, and now people's lives and well-being are threatened. And during that Veep debate, Vance tried to blame everything on immigrants, from job losses to the reason housing costs are rising out of control. But as Kyle Davidson writes in Michigan Advance, one study from the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas found immigrants boosted the U.S. economy without contributing to inflation, while another noted that immigration could put short-term pressure on housing and rent prices before new supply could be built, with housing experts pointing to a short supply as the reason for high housing costs. I like what Distill Social tweeted during the debate when Vance was blaming immigrants for rising housing costs, and they said, and I quote, "Only racists and people who want to make them richer think immigrants are causing the affordable housing crisis." I mean, yes, I can just see immigrants coming here to America and gobbling up $300,000 homes, can't you? And at least the Harris Walz team has a real plan to increase the housing supply while also lowering housing prices. I mean, as it stands, people right now are priced out of housing thanks to Wall Street speculators, and then they have to rent for a house at sky-high prices. This is not sustainable. California Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna recently tweeted, "My Stop Wall Street Landlords Act will help solve the market supply and demand issue by stopping Wall Street from buying up single-family homes." That's the problem. You see, something needs to be done since these greedy Wall Street hedge fund people gobbled up homes during the Great Recession and continue to make loads of cash. And that's where I do believe, if you don't mind me saying, that Governor Walz aired during the debate. I get it. He's all Minnesota nice and all, I know. But last night, especially while talking about housing, Walz had the perfect opportunity to look right at J.D. Vance and point at him and say, "It's greedy vulture capitalists like you, J.D. Vance, like you and your fellow billionaire tech bros who are to blame for rising housing costs, not immigrants." I mean, that was a perfect opportunity for him to just say, "Hey, you want an illustration? You want a bad guy for why housing prices are more expensive? This is your guy." I didn't think Walz did the best job at portraying Vance like the greedy, woman-hating bro that he's always been. I think he needed to be 2012 Joe Biden. I mean, remember, as Obama's vice president, Joe Biden served as Obama's attack dog, and he thoroughly dismantled and belittled then Republican boy wonder Paul Ryan in that year's vice presidential debate. Biden did a remarkable job. Look, I think that Tim Walz did a fine job, and it's obvious that he was coached not to do anything to really disrupt the campaign. But for far too many times, he allowed Vance, in my opinion, to say that he agreed with Walz, and that in a way allowed Vance to portray himself as not all that radical when he really is. Now, again, the debate turned out to be essentially a tie, but I do think it would have been productive for Walz to have been more of a fighter against Vance, and he still could have done it in a Minnesota nice kind of way. And in fact, I will say this, though, that the governor was pitch perfect on two fronts on that debate night. One, near the end of the debate where he cornered Vance by asking Vance if he thought Trump lost the 2020 debate. Vance refused to answer and Walz called it a damning moment. And it really was. It really was. And it showed just how much Vance is in this to appease his dear leader and to go along with whatever Trump says, unlike Trump's previous VP who had his life threatened on January 6th. And predictably, while making his Auburn Hills appearance after the debate, Vance doubled down on why he wouldn't answer Walz's question, saying, quote, "Here's the simple reason. The media is obsessed with talking about the election of 4 years ago. I'm focused on the election of 33 days from now because I want to throw Kamala Harris out of office and get back to common sense economic policies. Whatever those common sense economic policies are, I'm all ears, JD. Now, it should be noted that Vance knows how to sound polished, but as Walz demonstrated at that moment during the debate, there's no way to wiggle out of answering if you're for democracy or not. You either are for it or you're not. And the other part where I think Walz did an effective job at cornering Vance, just as Vice President Harris did with Trump, was on the issue of abortion. A CBS Snap poll after the debate showed that Walz earned a 62-38% advantage over Vance when it came to the issue of abortion rights. And like his dear leader boss, Vance danced around the issue as fast as he could, promising that his boss would never, ever, ever back some kind of national abortion ban, even though J.D. Vance himself supported a minimum nationwide abortion standard, which, in case you're wondering, is a national abortion ban. But what Vance showed himself to be is someone who simply loathes women, especially women who have the gall to make it in the world the way they see fit. You know, freedom. He also shows that he's not pro-family. In fact, MAGA Republicans are not a pro-family party. If they were, they'd do whatever they can to help women with the kids that they were forced to have. As Amanda Marcotte wrote in Salon right after the debate, and I'm quoting here, "As many feminist critics, myself included, have argued, Vance's relentless talk about children isn't rooted in a true enthusiasm for the joys of parenthood. Instead, it's about leveraging childbirth as a weapon against women's equality, driving them out of the workforce and into dependent relationships with men. That's why he also opposes affordable childcare and divorce. It's why he was giddy that his accomplished mother-in-law gave up a year of her career to give him free childcare so he didn't have to contribute as much to the care of children he sure loves to talk about. And it's why he's an adamant opponent of legal abortion, even though most women who have abortions are mothers trying to care for the children they already have." Well written there by Amanda Marcotte. MAGA Republicans like J.D. Vance don't have any solutions or policy ideas to help women once they're pregnant. They just want to punish women because in their own, whatever you want to call it, Christian nationalism or bro culture or a mix of both, having the power over a woman's freedom is the end game. Coming up here in just a moment, Amanda Major from Northwest Michigan Reproductive Freedom will join me. You're listening to LOL.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's rock and rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
As Jessica said, the best way to reach me is leftoflansing@gmail.com. That's the best way to continue the conversation on any topic that I bring up here. And it's also the best way for you to let me know of any stories that I should highlight here on the show. And it's also the best way to let me know if there's someone you think I should invite here on a future show. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. And please, please, please subscribe to Left of Lansing wherever you listen to your podcast and subscribe to us on YouTube because subscriptions are really important to we podcasters. So please subscribe and give it a 5-star review if you can as well. Okay. As I mentioned before the break, abortion rights and the freedom of women to make their own reproductive choices is still one of the major issues in this election. And that's not a real big surprising revelation, considering how the right-wing Supreme Court majority's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade is having severe repercussions for women across the country. Without the federal protections that women enjoyed under Roe, now states are making their own laws. And while there are states like here in Michigan that have enshrined abortion rights and repealed laws meant to make it more difficult for women to receive abortion care, there are other states with MAGA Republican majorities that are going out of their way to pass some of the most draconian anti-abortion rights laws. So joining me to talk more about the importance of this election when it comes to reproductive rights is Amanda Major. Amanda is an abortion rights advocate and is also vice president of Northwest Michigan Reproductive Freedom. Amanda, thanks so much for being on the show this week. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
If you don't mind, Amanda, since I covered this in the first segment, I'd like to get your take on the part of the vice presidential debate where MAGA Republican Ohio Senator J.D. Vance said that he doesn't support a national abortion ban. But when he ran for his Senate seat, he said that he did support a national minimum abortion standard. Now, I think that there's a 15-week abortion ban that's been introduced by South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. And I really haven't seen the national corporate media really ask either Trump or Vance about this issue. And it seems to me, Amanda, that a minimum abortion standard is still an abortion ban. Am I wrong?
I mean, they can call it whatever they want, but in the end, if it puts a line in the sand that says if you seek an abortion after this point, you will be criminalized, your doctor will be criminalized, that is literally a ban. So despite all of his fancy footwork trying to make his stance on abortion rights and the party in general more favorable to the public, we've seen from his past rhetoric, from Trump and other Republicans' actions when they held power, that they are opposed to reproductive freedom. And so I think actions mean more than words at this point.
Abortion rights activist and writer Jessica Valenti, I love a lot of the stuff that she writes, and she posted a tweet this morning where she is just lambasting the media for posting headlines. For instance, there's one saying, Trump says he'll veto a national abortion ban, when no one has really pressured him to answer if he'd agree to these so-called minimum standards, whatever they say. I mean, what I don't get, Amanda, is how anyone can take these guys, whatever they say on this issue, especially at face value.
Look, I mean, they have seen in the past couple of election cycles that people care about reproductive freedom. It's been said that abortion wins elections. Their views are not what the majority of Americans want. And so they are trying to disguise their views, backtrack, say whatever they can say. So they aren't being tied to these bans, this crisis of care that's currently happening in so many states across the country right now.
I thought maybe the best part of the debate for Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, or at least his best line, was when he asked, how can we say something as basic as your rights is determined on geography? I thought that was his best moment, because, Amanda, I mean, that's where we are. And as we're seeing, where a woman lives determines what kinds of reproductive freedoms she has. And that's not what America should be about.
No, absolutely not. It's scary. It's harmful to so many folks in the population, whether it's because of their financial situation, their skin color. We just can't be determining care by where you are in the U.S. And yeah, that was a great line by Walz.
You know, as you were talking, I did think of something else that Governor Walz said, and it was an excellent point. And it's when he put Vance in a corner, saying that Vance doesn't support policies to help care for these kids when they're after they're born, or any kinds of policies to help mothers take care of these kids, like affordable child care, for instance. But I think there's something more to this. And I think Vance, I don't know if he wanted to purposely do this, maybe accidentally laid it out there for everyone to see, because as we know, he said it many times and many podcasts and interviews. I mean, he's laid it out there that he kind of loathes women who don't have children. But, you know, it's obvious that he really only loathes women for having any kind of choice when it comes to their reproductive freedoms. And it shows, you know, at least to me, that they really don't think highly of women other than being some kind of baby making vessels. I don't know. I'd like to get your take on that.
Yeah, that's just what we've seen everywhere, where people are really pushing anti-abortion legislation and also anti-family legislation, anti-child. We've seen time and time again that they don't actually care about women, besides, you know, maybe during that time in pregnancy where they want to ensure that they stay pregnant. You know, they don't really care about our health, our well-being. Like you said, they don't care about children after they're born. And I think this is an opportunity for Dems and progressives to really embrace the whole idea of reproductive justice, which is a movement championed by women of color that basically says you should be free not to have children, you should be free to have children, and you should be free to raise those children in a healthy and safe environment. And that takes into consideration healthcare in general, access to housing, safe environments, living free from violence, a just criminal justice system. You know, it takes into all of those things that I view as pro-family. And I think that's where Walz has demonstrated in Minnesota that he does support those values. And I think in general, the party needs to really head in that direction, in contrast to the Republican Party and how they have really no positive plans for women, children, people of color, LGBTQ folks. Anyone, really.
Right. And Amanda, if you don't mind, I would just like to piggyback what you just said here. You said that Democrats are the ones who are actually proposing pro-family policies. They're presenting everyone with a pro-family agenda. I've always been steamed at how easily Democrats always gave up that pro-family agenda towards the Republican Party when they have nothing of value or they have nothing to really offer in terms of being a pro-family party. They aren't. It's the Democrats who are the ones who are backing proposals to extend the child tax credit, to make childcare more affordable. And it's the Democrats, especially on the state level, like here in Michigan and also in Tim Walz's Minnesota, where universal public school meals are now law. So it's really Democrats and progressives who are the pro-family party. And I think it's time for Democrats to take that message away from MAGA Republicans. Anyway, sorry about that, getting off on a tangent. You know, if there's one part of the debate, though, Amanda, where I think maybe could have gone better on the abortion rights issue for Tim Walz and also for Vice President Harris in her debate against Trump last month. And it's the part when it comes to pushing back whenever Republicans say that Democrats want no restrictions at all on abortions and will allow abortions up to 8 and 9 months of pregnancies. And that always gets to me because they didn't really, I don't think, sufficiently push back on that attack. And I think it's because Republicans understand that explaining why some women have to have abortions later in their terms and pregnancies isn't something you can just explain in a 10-second soundbite. But I do think Walz did a decent job in saying that those decisions must be between a woman and her doctor, and that's pressing the whole freedom issue, and I think that's good. But I do think that Democrats could do a better job at explaining the painful decisions some women have to make when it comes to terminating a pregnancy after the first trimester. What do you think?
I think that the conversation has really been centered around determining the cutoff, you know, the gestational period, the acceptable time frame to enact these bans. And I think we need to get away from that and really reframe it as in a way that everyone can agree with, and that Who is best able to make these decisions? Is it the patient and their doctor, or is it the government? And should women who seek care for whatever reason, whether it's a health crisis, whether they became aware of new information in their pregnancy and they need to make a decision about their health and their future, you know, we need to just reframe this in a way that focuses on women and patients and giving them the power to make decision, because we are good moral decision makers. We are thoughtful as patients and able to think about those complex ideas in our situations and make the best choices for ourselves. And we really need to redirect that conversation to focus on that and bodily autonomy and trusting patients. Because when we focus too much on bans, it takes the personal lived experience out of it. You know, there's always going to be people on the other side of a ban who suffer from that line in the sand. We have an opportunity here to kind of move past that and take a different approach.
Yeah, we do. Amanda, what led you to become an active voice in the abortion rights movement and part of Northwest Michigan Reproductive Freedom?
I mean, I've shared my story in the past, but essentially I got involved because I had an abortion. I was pregnant with what I hoped would be our second child in 2017 when my husband and I found out halfway through the pregnancy that we were just given a really devastating, life-limiting diagnosis. We decided at that point, out of compassion for myself, my family, and the child we'd hoped for, that we needed to end the pregnancy. And so we did that, and I was just shy of 24 weeks. I share my story because there's a lot of talk about gestational limits and viability, and that is not a defined point in pregnancy, really. All pregnancies are unique. With my pregnancy, there was really no point of viability. And for us, we had to experience the added stress and financial hardship of trying to access care later in the pregnancy like that, because there are limited options for people later in pregnancy. And so that just kind of really allowed me to see the challenge of some of these later abortions that are so demonized by those in opposition to abortion.
Can you tell me how you feel when you see these stories of women who are really needing abortion care later in their pregnancy due to issues like you talked about with your issue? And then, of course, they can't get any kind of care because A, either it's against the law, or B, that doctors are afraid to do anything in fearing that they will be breaking the law. I mean, can you share your feelings on when you read those stories?
It's so heartbreaking. I mean, it really brings back our experience and getting that heartbreaking news and how difficult that was to access that care, but also realizing we were lucky that this happened before the Dobbs decision, that we didn't have to flee from our state and travel across the country to get what should be accessible to all, healthcare. And so to see and hear these stories of women who have unnecessarily suffered because of these bans, some, many in positions similar to my own, it's gut-wrenching. The fact that they are also willing to share their stories, I do think it opens hearts and minds, and it takes a lot of courage to be able to do that, especially in this current environment.
Right. And Amanda, that's why I'm so happy that you told your story, because as you said, there are thousands of women out there who have similar experiences like yours. And it just points to exactly why abortion care is needed throughout the country, why it must be codified throughout the country. That's also why, like I said, I think Democrats have to do a better job at explaining to everybody why there are abortions that take place after the first trimester and why such procedures are needed, especially when the fetus isn't viable and especially when the mother's health is at risk. So Democrats have to do a better job, I think, at that messaging part. And it really, really does pain me. It really pains me a lot when I hear some Democrats adopt right-wing messaging or right-wing language when it comes to this particular part of abortion care. I will hear some Democrats use the term late-term abortions, and that really, really gets under my skin because they're just using what was invented by the right wing. And we're seeing how these draconian laws across the country, especially in these red states, are having dire effects on women, especially like the one mother in Georgia who could not receive care and she died. I mean, we're seeing how the Republican Party is putting the lives of women in danger.
Well, yeah, I would just say people really misunderstand who gets abortions later in pregnancy. We're talking about people who are among the most marginalized, who are not able to access healthcare, whether it's lack of funds or just where they live. We're talking about people who may have been victims of crimes, people with complex health issues, of course, people who are carrying a pregnancy that is very unhealthy, or, you know, maybe this fetus is very sick, like myself, and also children, sadly. When you really stop and think about who needs later abortion care and realize who that is, and that these folks are then becoming the scapegoats and just tossed around on the debate stage as if they're just careless or heartless or whatever. I mean, that's just not the case. And I think if people cared to understand more about later abortion care, they would really be more sympathetic to those who need it.
All right. Well, you wrote a piece in The Gander last summer about the gains that Michigan has made in abortion rights since the Supreme Court ruling there that ended Roe. And in the piece, you gave some advice to those who will be on this side of the fight advocating for abortion rights in this election. And you wrote, "Don't use stigmatizing language pushed by anti-abortion groups." I was wondering, what kinds of language are you talking about?
Well, I mean, you mentioned late-term abortion as a very damaging term that has been used by both the right and also left. It's not medically accurate. Abortion later in pregnancy, or just referring to at what point that abortion took place, are better terms. And then, I mean, I have heard even Democrat candidates running as recently as a couple of years ago mention that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare.
And rare.
Yeah. And we just need to get away from that, because that's suggesting that only certain abortions are worthy, that there are good and bad abortions. And it's just, we don't need to be policing that. You know, it's healthcare. Everyone deserves to be able to control their own decisions, their health, their future. Yeah, I think there's a lot of stigmatizing language that people unknowingly maybe use. And just because it's, I think we have allowed the anti-abortion groups to kind of direct the conversation over the last 50 years. And we, as people who are affirming of reproductive freedom, need to set down those stigmatizing terms and speak more honestly about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And another point that you made in that Gander piece was for people to advocate for abortion access at the local level. Now, you're located in the northwest region of the state. Obviously, it's got many rural areas out there. Can you talk about abortion access and that being an issue in that region and probably other regions, especially in the northern regions of the state?
It's hard up here. You know, I think currently the most northern clinic providing in-clinic procedural care is in like the Saginaw area. So, you know, northern Michigan, the UP, patients have to travel maybe hundreds of miles if they need or want in-clinic care, as opposed to telemedicine abortion, which is now available, which is an awesome development in the state, but not everyone can have that. Not everyone wants that. So there's opportunities for folks to advocate at the county level, to encourage their local leaders to invest in reproductive health care, and just making localities more open to getting that care in. Because, I mean, reproductive health care in general is lacking in many rural areas of the state. So we need to encourage that growth throughout so people can get care for all reproductive health.
All right. Well, Amanda Mazur, Vice President of Northwest Michigan Reproductive Freedom, if there's someone in your area of the state who'd like to get involved with your group, what's the best way that they could do so?
They can visit our website, which is NWM4reprofreedom.org. We're also on Facebook, Instagram. We would love people to reach out and connect with us and see how we can collaborate to kind of advance the message of reproductive freedom and also work on addressing some of this very pervasive stigma that harms a lot of patients.
You're doing great work, Amanda. Thanks so much for being on and sharing your story and your opinions here on abortion rights. And it's thanks to people on the front lines like you that women have the freedom to do what they want to with their bodies here in Michigan, and that the government cannot stop them. So thank you for everything that you're doing, and come back soon, okay?
Yeah, thank you.
He enjoys watching sporting events from years ago. He can recite most of the 1984 Detroit Tigers lineup. He will go to the mat in saying Michigan has produced some of the greatest music in the past 60 years. But most of all, he enjoys the loyalty of a fine dog while sipping on a tasty Michigan beer. Oh, and he loves talking about politics, if you haven't been able to tell yet. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Need more Pat? Visit and subscribe to leftoflansing.com. Now, back to Pat.
It was really great getting to actually talk with Amanda Mazur. We follow each other on Twitter, and she posts some very important details and facts on the abortion rights front on a daily basis. And I just have to say again, it was awesome getting to talk with her. And I will link to the Northwest Michigan Reproductive Freedom site, both on leftoflansing.com and also wherever you're listening to the show. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. In my Monday musing for this week, I brought up how MAGA Republican U.S. Senate candidate for Michigan, Florida Mike Rogers, attended an event with Republican Chair Pete Hoekstra, in which Hoekstra told the crowd that Democrats will probably steal some votes, illustrating once again for me that there's no difference, and there's really never been a difference, between the perceived old-time Republicans like Hoekstra and the former MAGA chair that he ousted, Christina Caramo. And Florida Mike apparently didn't push back at all against that nutty claim. But Florida Mike, who was also once perceived as a serious Republican lawmaker and not a MAGA loon, told a crowd full of seniors at an event in Troy last month that allowing Medicare to negotiate for lower drug prices is something that he's passionately against, and referred to the policy as sugar high politics. Wow. So Florida Mike is announcing he's for higher prescription costs. Is that what he's saying? I mean, it's an interesting track that he's taking here. Let's hear more, shall we? According to good friend of the show, reporter John King of Michigan Advance, he writes that they obtained the audio from the event in which you can hear Rogers announce that the federal government should not be involved in lowering drug prices. Huh. All right. Well, let's go on some more, shall we? John King writes in his comments, Rogers reiterated his support for Medicare Part D, which helps cover some of the costs associated with prescription drugs, noting that he voted for its passage while in Congress in 2003. I was involved in adding prescription drugs to Medicare for the very first time, Rogers told those in attendance. I thought it was nuts that you had an insurance plan that didn't have coverage. I worked to make Part D available, and it saved literally thousands and thousands of dollars per family. However, John King writes, the legislation included a provision backed by the pharmaceutical industry that explicitly prohibited the federal government from negotiating drug prices. I'll be darned. And John King also says here that Rogers later defended the provision, telling C-SPAN in 2006 that he really believed free market forces would work best. But according to a 2019 Congressional Budget Office report, the reward instead was a quadrupling of net spending on specialty drugs and Medicare Part D from $8.7 billion in 2010 to $32.8 billion in 2015. Wow, that's a pretty mighty fine day's work there, Mike Rogers. I'm sure that was just dumb luck for your pharmaceutical pals. So while Democrat Alyssa Slotkin, who's Florida Mike's opponent for the Michigan U.S. Senate seat, she voted for the Inflation Reduction Act in the House, and now she can rightly tout the success of the IRA's ability to lower some prescription drug costs, and while it also capped insulin at $35 a month. But Florida Mike would have been against that? Okay, I mean, meanwhile, Alyssa Slotkin can tout how 10 drug prices will be lowered by 2026 and more will be lowered in the future. John King's story notes, according to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, the discounts on the first 10 drugs selected for negotiation range between 38 and 79% off list prices. If the new prices had been in effect last year, Medicare would have saved an estimated $6 billion, or approximately 22% across the 10 selected drugs, according to CMS. Huh, and Florida Mike Rogers is against that? Well, look, as I've talked about here recently, this maybe should not come as a surprise considering how much bribery cash Florida Mike Rogers has accepted through the years from the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, don't forget, Florida Mike was advocating for loosening up restrictions on pain medications when he was in Congress, and then soon after, the opiate crisis exploded. Hey, but at least Florida Mike cashed in on everyone else's expense. But what do I know? Maybe fighting for higher drug costs for average Michiganders while raking in more pharmaceutical cash is a winning campaign strategy. I cannot wait to see how it turns out for Florida Mike.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Left of Lansing. Special thanks again to Amanda Major, the Vice President of Northwest Michigan Reproductive Freedom, for being on here this week. And thanks to all of you for listening and supporting the show. It means a lot to me. Contact me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Oh, and I just want to give a Left of Lansing high five to Vice President Harris for announcing her support to legalizing marijuana. And she said that she's felt for a long time that marijuana should be legal. So here, Madam Vice President, soon to be President, and maybe in celebration of your announcement, I'll treat myself to a quarter gummy sometime this weekend. Hey, look, I'm a lightweight. What can I say? And what a time it is to be a sports fan here in Michigan. The Lions earned an electrifying win against their nemesis, the Seattle Seahawks, on Monday Night Football. And of course, the Detroit Lions keep shocking the baseball world by reaching the final eight in the playoffs. I have to say, there's always a different feel to this state when everyone's got Tigers fever, isn't there? Oh, and get your new COVID vaccine shot. I got mine this week. It's not that bad, I promise you. Until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.